Welcome to another episode of Roll or Die. Today we are bringing you one of the newest absolute black belts on the block. There we go. Sorry for the technical issue there. He is an amazing guy. He gave probably one of the best black belt speeches that I have heard at the recent Absolute Grading. So we're really looking forward to getting to know him a little bit better. He's got a new baby on the way. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about his jiu-jitsu. He is Nick Hayden. Thanks for joining us, Nick.
All right. Thank you for having me. I'm glad my speech was good.
Awesome, brother.
Shower for weeks and weeks, probably years at this point.
Yeah, I love the final part as well, where you're like, and I'll see you all on the mats on Monday. It's like, I'm stealing that part. It's like, no, this is just another acknowledgement, but back on the mats, there'll be no break. Yeah. It was like, it's a Sunday, and we'll be back on Monday. Absolutely, brother. What was it like to receive your black belt, man?
It's cool. It's, I don't know, like, I think at like white and blue, it's something you really focus on. Mm-hmm. And then jiu-jitsu just becomes this like part of your life that you're like, yeah, it'll happen at some point. I haven't actually been training as much, like with the baby in a couple of weeks, we've been like full baby mode right now. But it's been good. It's been fun. I haven't like noticed any like changes with people yet, but I think that'll come. People like afraid to roll. They will like ask questions and stuff.
It's funny. Yeah. With any belt promotion, I think you sometimes feel like, hey, now I've got all this magical power now, you know, I've got the next belt or whatever. But then you look down and you're like, wait a minute, I'm actually still the same as I was yesterday. So, I mean, I think with Lockie especially, you were probably ready for the black belt a long time before you actually got it. So the actual skills or whatever, they're still there. Like they haven't changed. There's nothing different.
And I've been lording it over the other guys at Brown Belt, just telling them, call me professor, they've got a bow to me. Just really getting that like couple of months in while I've got it still.
Yeah.
Awesome, brother. Yes. Now, but while we're waiting for Kim, we were talking about length of, you were saying that you like the length of this podcast. Like we are now in episode, like well into episode, into the 200th episodes range.
We are 200 plus episodes. Very professional.
I don't know what happened.
That's your karma, Anton, for hanging on me when I couldn't connect my camera.
Talking about, as you said, episode 200.
Yeah. Well, as is cursed. So you were saying that one of the things that maybe works about our show is the length of the show. So what are your views about that?
I don't like it. I think it's, what is it, like 30, 40 minute spot?
Yeah.
I think it is much better than like the 2-3 hour long things. I mean, I think I used to listen to podcasts that long when I was like commuting a lot as well.
Yeah.
It's like sitting in the car or on the bike for a long period, but I don't know. Like I was saying before, it's like everyone's kind of got two or three interesting things to say and they just find different ways to say it. And when you've got like 2 hours, you feel like you're going around in circles a lot.
Yeah. Are you doing that, Kim? Do you listen to like the 3 hour podcasts?
Yeah, well, I am commuting still a bit now, especially since I've moved. I've got to commute a bit longer to work. So yeah, it's Joe Rogan podcasts, like I think you mentioned before, they're definitely long ones. And Jocko podcasts, they're also, some of those can be like 4 or 5 hours. It's crazy. But I can't really listen to the same one all the time. Like that's too long. I sort of have to listen for an hour, listen to something else, listen for another hour. So, yeah, hopefully people enjoy our 40, 35, 40-minute ones because it's just enough to keep people interested. Absolutely. Yeah.
I got lots of questions for Nick, but you go, Kim. You go.
No. So you guys seem to have like a bit of an off-the-mat thing going on too. Like you were talking when we were messaging about this, setting this up about your chess.
Oh.
What's happening there? What's the story, Nick? You're into the chess as well?
I am into the chess. I'm not very good at chess, but I like playing it. Maybe that's a metaphor for jiu-jitsu in there. No, I think I joined probably around like everyone did around the COVID sort of time, sitting around a lot, just plugging away at it. And then, so I live in St. Kilda, and recently there's been like a little group of amateurs that have created the St. Kilda Chess Club. So we meet up down like Wednesday evenings and Saturday lunchtime, and we just like play some chess, and everyone's bad. So it's great. And it's just like the blind leading the blind.
Is everyone improving? Because one of the things I've noticed about chess, and this is very jiu-jitsu related, is like you can play thousands of hours of chess and not improve. That's the thing people think. If you just play chess, you will improve. No, not true at all. So is this group improving, or is it just playing chess?
I think this group is because they're motivated. But I did see a thing on Reddit once, and someone did analysis across like the whole chess.com player base. And I was like 80% of people get to a ranking and then will just sit at that ranking for like the rest of their playing days. They'll never get better.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, yeah, do you try to get better, or are you just like playing for fun? For me, I'm just playing for fun. I just have a good time. Like otherwise, yeah, I'd just be sitting there and scrolling Facebook or something.
So you said it's on Saturdays, because I see you at St. Kilda at jiu-jitsu on Saturdays. Would you ever go there, do jiu-jitsu, and then go and do chess immediately after?
Absolutely.
How is that? Do you find the parallels, or?
I think so. I think jiu-jitsu has given me like a really good like beginner's mindset of just like approaching things and like being okay, being bad at it for a while, which I think some people come to the chess club and they're like, okay, I've like played a little bit online, like I've got to be an expert. And I think you see that probably with like white belts joining off the street for the first time as well, where like you just have to kind of be okay with like, I'm going to be bad at this for a while, and everyone else here has been doing this longer than me, and we're just going to, it's going to suck. I'm going to lose every game for like weeks and weeks, but I'll slowly get better. I think it's also really nice just to like sit in the park. It's like St. Kilda Botanic Gardens. You like bring some lunch, bring a sandwich. It's great.
That's so cool, man. And actually, jiu-jitsu is the same. Like, it's an outlet for me, like as much as anything else. Like it's my happy place to go. It's very important to me to enjoy jiu-jitsu, and to anyone I'm involved with. Like, if someone's doing jiu-jitsu and not enjoying it, I have to question how long they're going to last, you know?
Life's too short. Like,
life's too short.
If you're not enjoying it, why are you here?
Absolutely.
It's not like you've got a big payoff, like a AFL footballer or something, where you're going to make millions in a few years. It's like,
yeah,
you're not having a good time. Like, what are you doing?
I hear what you're saying, but also I find it, like, especially in the beginning, it is kind of hard to enjoy it when you feel like just so overwhelmed. I don't know if you guys can remember those early days where you just feel like you're always two or three steps behind everyone else. You feel like nothing you do works. And the thing that you thought you knew, you just don't. You just feel like really lost. So I feel like it's hard to draw that parallel between jiu-jitsu and chess, especially in those early days, because there's just too much physicality going on in the beginning for it to be anything cerebral. Like, you just can't draw that parallel. Would you agree? You guys are more chess players than me.
Interesting thought.
I think the physical side definitely has a component in jiu-jitsu that is hard to deal with when you start, I think, especially for young men.
Yeah.
Joining, like, I started when I was 19, and like 19-year-old guys, you think you can take on anyone, you can do anything, whatever, you're the strongest person ever. And then you just get bashed by like people that are, sometimes maybe they're bigger than you, maybe they're not. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's a thing you've kind of got to deal with.
Mm.
And I guess that's why I think people say, like, around that sort of purplish, brownish range, it's like, if you can make it that far, you'll probably make it to black. Because all the hard stuff is done up front.
Yeah.
And then you can become a bit more strategic as well. I feel like it's not until around purple, disagreeing with me if you like, that you really do have a lot of strategy to your jiu-jitsu.
Yep.
For me, anyway, absolutely. White and blue is just reacting. You're just trying to stay alive, and you're just trying to do at least one or two things. But by purple, I feel, then you can develop a little bit more. That's just my thoughts.
Yeah, I think so too. I think what was I doing at blue belt? So I trained with Leo Aruda.
Graded blue belt for starters that everybody talks about. Yeah, there was a couple of wisps, a couple of strands slightly.
I've still got it downstairs. If my daughter does jiu-jitsu, I'm going to give it to her.
Awesome.
it'll live on. It'll be a 45-year-old belt by that time. I think, yeah, at Blue, I was like very physical game and just like happy to just scrap with people and had no real kind of plan. I think I like when I started learning a couple of techniques and like having a little bit of strategy, I got much better results.
Yeah.
Going back to the chess thing, I think where jiu-jitsu is physical, I think people have a like this idea that to win at chess, you have to be like smarter than someone. You have to be like a, you know, you're a genius and you've beaten these fools that have no idea. Where I don't think that's true. Like a lot of it's pattern recognition, which I think comes back to jiu-jitsu as well, where you're just like, I heard it described once when I was a white belt, someone's like, of course, like a blue belt or a purple belt is going to beat you because you're trying to have a debate. One person has a book, a dictionary, thesaurus, and you're trying to argue with a book this big. Like, of course, you don't have the words to even know the direction you're going. How could you ever try to beat those points?
Yeah. Actually, on that note, there's two points here for me, but oh no, now I've lost both because I was trying to capture two. but on the smartness side of things, like I think that one of the things I've discovered for myself, and it's definitely true for jiu-jitsu, is that the like overextending yourself in chess is fraught with danger. If you overextend, you move too quickly into territory, you don't have enough resources, and then they just get chopped down. And I find that that is something I've learned later in jiu-jitsu, is just not to go for crazy things that put me off balance or my arms are too far extended, trying to create too much space or whatever. And I find that like white belts around me, their hip bumping is massive. It's a massive movement that just creates so much space that you can tuck your legs in and under and around. So that is something that definitely applies for me. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it goes through waves where like, being really athletic is helpful in the beginning. Like if you're just like a ultra athletic white belt, you can probably fight outside of your division. Yeah. And then in that, like you've kind of got the choice, like, do I stick with the athleticism and just focus on this? Or do I actually take the time to try and learn what's going on in the meantime? Mm. And I think like the better people you see over time are the ones that take that time to actually learn the technique. Where if you're relying on athleticism forever, eventually you're going to hit someone that has athleticism and skill and you're just not going to win, you know?
Yeah.
You're crumbling. And like you say that even at the pro level where like some guys are ultra athletic and then they end up in a gold medal match and they just look like amateurs because they don't have the technique there.
For sure. And so tell us about your journey, Nick. You've had quite the journey to get to black. Tell us how.
I never thought I'd be a guy that like trained at a lot of gyms, but I kind of accidentally became that guy. So I started at a gym called Ryoku Martial Arts in Paraka in SA. It is closed now. So it was run by a guy called Mark Cunningham, who was a blue belt at the time, and Steve Henderson, who is a black belt in Geelong now. He was also teaching there as a blue belt. I went to that gym because it was actually really far from my house. It was like a 45-minute drive, but it was the cheapest. And I was young and I had no money. So you kind of don't do like how much is petrol costing. You don't do that now at that time. I was going out there.
5 minutes in Adelaide too is really far. Can I just interrupt to say that? Like everything 15 minutes away in Adelaide is fine, but more than that is considered super.
I was going to areas I'd never been in. Cross town.
God, I'm saving all this money.
That was a John Will school, and I actually credit it with like some of my techniques that I still use because they were really like focused on the control aspects of jiu-jitsu. And like I know you've had John on before, and like his perspective on jiu-jitsu is like different to some of the Brazilian aspect or the more modern style as well. So I trained there. I think I got one or two stripes. I think two stripes. Mm-hmm. And then I decided, I think I'd competed maybe once or twice there. And I was like, I want to do more competitions. Like I need to go to a competitor gym where everyone's competing, which was Aruda BJJ at that time in Theberton. So that was like a great era. It's like Declan was one guy that I trained with a lot at that time. Brad as well, you know, bunch of these guys, like we had a really good room at that time. So got my, my blue belt from Leo. That was 2000 and what was this? 13, I think. 13, 14. Trained there, loved it. Then met my now wife. We met in a Balinese hostel slash nightclub.
Cool.
She's American. She was traveling. She was doing a work holiday visa in Australia. She was living in Melbourne. We both happened to be in Bali at the time for over the Easter long weekend. We met each other. We both came back. I went back to Adelaide. She went to Melbourne. And then I've ended up moving to Melbourne, which has brought me to from Leo to Tiago in the CBD. And then, again, just like convenience, I started training at South Yarra because it was around the corner from my house. Mm. And I've just been very lucky with like being around good people over that time. And since then, since 2015, been training primarily at like South Yarra and St. Kilda with Lachlan Giles.
Amazing, man.
Now a black belt.
Yeah. Amazing. And also that blue belt that you got, that wispy, very faded, very is that was given to you by your coach. Is that right?
Yes, that was Leo's blue belt. Awesome. That was great to receive.
All right. So part two now, and it does segue in nicely here, is like plateauing, right? Because, and this links back to chess as well, because when you plateau in chess, it sucks. It's not pleasurable to play. That unless you are just like you keep walking around saying you're having fun, but at some point it's not fun anymore. I can tell you from experience. And same in jiu-jitsu. When you're plateauing in jiu-jitsu, it becomes unfun. Like you just feel like, what is wrong with me? Or is it my coach? Or, you know, or does everyone hate me? Well, like you just get through the weirdest spaces, right? Mm-hmm. When you plateau. And I remember seeing you at a monthly masters, and hopefully this is not too personal, but you were like, man, you were brown belt at the time. And you're like, I'm not even that into competing anymore. I don't know. It seemed like you were experiencing some sort of plateau. So what has plateauing been like for you when you do on that journey?
Yeah, I think I've gone through a few different phases on it. Mm-hmm. I think at this point I've been training for 12 years, like if we include COVID, which I think is like natural to have peaks and valleys over that sort of time. And if you try to fight against it, you're just going to make it worse. I think my worst plateau was probably around purple belt, where the pool of competitors dropped off quite a lot. I went from doing these big blue belt divisions where you've got like 30 people in a division and you like have all these matches. And even if you lose, you're like, cool, let's have had a great time. And then I went to purple belt where I only had maybe one or two people in a division, which became like one, boring because you're always against the same people. And then,
Welcome I feel to like a female's journey into jiu-jitsu then. Sorry.
No, go on. It's the same. It's the same problem. And at purple, like losing when it's like one or two people in a division, like feels more personal. When I was in these massive blue belt tournaments, you're like, oh, I've made it four fights in and I've lost. Like, okay, that's pretty good. But being like one and done at purple, and it's like one guy, and it's like always the same sort of people you're up against. That becomes a grind. Similar issues, I think, at brown. I'm not sure if it'll continue at black because I feel like people kind of pull at the black belt level.
Yeah.
But certainly brown as well. Like there might be at like nationals, like our big major tournament, you've got like four people in a division.
Wow. Yeah.
It's like, is it a thing that I want to like dedicate a lot of time to continue doing that.
Interesting.
In terms of like training, dealing with it, I think as well, just like I said in my black belt speech, I've gone from like pushing trolleys at Bunnings, doing jiu-jitsu and MMA because I wanted to be a fighter. Now I've got like a career and a kid on the way and a house and I've moved cities and I've like went to university and like all this stuff has happened over time. They're like jiu-jitsu is like taking the back seat in some ways and the front seat in others. For me, people make the joke about my Baron Bolos game. That was sort of a resolution to plateauing because like I was doing like a lot of like standing passing, a lot of like body locks, knee cut, this sort of stuff. I was getting so bored with it, but I was like good at it. So like I was like, okay, I'm going to do this because this is how I win a match. I was like, what's the opposite of this? Like, out of everything in jiu-jitsu, what is the furthest away from like the knee cut pass can I do? And I was like, barambolas, crab ride, like this stuff I've never played that like you typically don't see in like the heavyweight division. We're going to try it. We're going to see what happens. And it made it a lot more fun. It like, I feel like I get to call out like brown belt or black belt magic now if I like do it to someone. I don't know how I did it. Just started rolling and I ended up on your back and here we are.
Love it.
And was that physically, like, how was that for you, Nick? Like, as a bigger guy, was it difficult for you to make that transition, or because it is a bit more of a smaller, flexible person's game, if I could say?
I think it's just finding, like, what works. Like, I don't have... Like you watch, like some of the guys have got such good hamstring flexibility and able to sit on their like neck and shoulders quite a lot. I think just being like reasonable and responsible with it of like, yeah, if I'm rolling with someone that's like 100 kilo, I probably shouldn't let them like squash me from the bolo. Like I should probably just bail or find a different way to do it. It's been probably a lesson more so in persistence than anything else, which I think helped with like the plateauing side of things, where having to actually like train to get better at something compared to if you show me how to do like a weave pass, I can probably pick it up in like an afternoon and have like a lot of base to kind of go with it. And then being a larger guy, I can apply a lot of pressure and everything. Flipping that to doing the bolos, it's like, all right, I've actually got to spend the time to get good at this. And just kind of figure out how far I can push it before it's a problem, which I think has gotten better over time. I think I probably was like at risk of hurting myself on my neck or anything like that in the beginning. So like Lockie's been great to help with that as well. And just being able to take the time to like, okay, what is actually a sensible position? Cause you watch it, you watch a highlight reel and it looks like they're just like throwing people and taking the back and it's amazing. But there's actually a lot of like steps within that to pick apart.
I love it. So how does that, well, like when you take a whole new piece of your game, like I'm actually in the same process. Like this is the era of legs for me, like knee bars and those sorts of things. I've not done anywhere near enough work on that. And now I am, I'm dedicating a year to it. So I know I kind of feel, but I'm very at the beginning stage. You've gone right through that stage. How does that impact your overall game and your overall results? Like, was there anything surprising in that journey for you?
I think the best thing about it has been more confidence playing off my back. So I lost a competition match at Blue Belt because I didn't pull guard. And I could have pulled guard and won the match. Instead, I've lost. I think it might have even been on like a stalling penalty that I lost it on. And after that match, I had Leo come up to me. This is at Blue Belt. Leo's like, until you get, like, for 6 months, you're just going to play guard. That's all you're going to do. And I did. Every class, all I would do is play guard. And now doing, like, the bolos has given me the same sort of confidence where it's like, you just have to do it. Just, like, suffer through again. This is going to be uncomfortable for, like, 6 weeks, like, maybe a quarter, whatever it is. And then, like, I'm going to start getting better at it. I'm going to be able to start winning matches with this. And now I play like a very heavy guard game, which is, I feel has made my jiu-jitsu a lot better overall. I think playing top positions comes naturally. That's what I've always liked doing. And I really did have to force myself to play other stuff.
Yeah, awesome. Brilliant.
Changing topics a bit here. Tell us about Juiced BJJ.
Oh, what's that? And my little baby. My first little baby.
That's right.
Juiced BJJ is juicedbjj.com. It is a t-shirt rash guard brand that I've created, jiu-jitsu apparel brand, just kind of like memeing on jiu-jitsu a little bit. I think there's so much content and clothing that's like, we are like apes in the jungle, we're lions, we're going to, I don't know, take over the savannah, whatever it is. And I just kind of like wanted to poke a bit of fun at it. So we've got three designs, Fishing for Heels, Big Boy Bolos, and Juice Jitteros. I've got the Big Boy Bolos on here. Mm-hmm. that was something that myself and a few training partners would just yell out during training when sort of some of the heavier guys were doing barambolos. We're like, we got thick thighs, so we can just yeet people across the mat. So like, just do that. You don't need the technique. Just yeet. So I started Juiced in last February. So it's coming up on a year old. And it was just a bit of a project. So like my day job, I was doing a lot of e-commerce consulting for years and years. I'm a software engineer by trade and manage engineering teams as well. And I was just kind of like, I just got to try this. Like one time I just have to like start this business and just like give it a go and see what happens. And, you know, if it explodes, then we go, that was a dumb idea, then okay. But maybe it doesn't. And I attended a talk a couple of years ago. I was like a Ruby on Rails software engineering talk. And the guy was like, people way dumber than you have started successful businesses. So why not? Why not you? just like give it a crack. So yeah, I've been running for about a year now. We have a code for today, if I can plug.
Yes, please.
So 10% off your order, whatever you have in your cart, you get 10% off. It is roll or die, all caps. Yeah, go buy. Free shipping Australia-wide. And you're supporting just a dude. A dude in his spare bedroom shipping stuff out.
Absolutely, man. I have your t-shirt and I have your rashi. And when people see it, like Kamal saw it, for example, is like, man, I love that rash guard. Where do I get them? And I was like, yeah, actually you train with the guy. You train when you go to St Kilda. But yeah, it's really good stuff, man. And I just really enjoy the quality of it, man. It's been a great experience for me to, you know, and to support you. I wear it a lot, probably too much. I gotta wash it.
I love to hear it. I'm stoked. Like it's so interesting to like create something and then people like it.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, cool. This podcast. Yeah, exactly. Like the podcast. You're like, oh, wow. People listen to it. Like, okay.
Yeah.
There's something people want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how is it going? Is it actually going? Is it going?
Yeah. The hardest thing is just like balancing it around everything else in life. I try to be open about the numbers as well. I feel like that's a useful thing for people. So we did like 60 sales, just over 60 sales last year. I say we, it's myself and my wife, for around a bit over 4,000 in revenue, which is fine. Like I thought it would like not work. I thought I'd get like 5 sales. So every time I get a sale, I'm stoked and I run down and I show my wife on my phone. And
so good. yeah.
Yeah, I think there is value in like the building in public strategy some people talk about where you just like share stuff.
Absolutely. Open source, man. That level of authenticity, especially in a small community like jiu-jitsu, it means something. It's like, okay, well, I definitely want to support Nick and Megan now because like, you know, they're not going to be buying a Ferrari out of this. This is contributing to them and it's great wares, you know? So it's like, it's awesome. You know,
and it's Australian. A lot of the stuff is from overseas. We want to support our local people. Yeah.
Exactly. And so looking at doing potentially some new designs this year. And yeah, just keep plugging away at it. Just see what happens.
Yeah, you've always been quite entrepreneurial though, because I remember you did the quintet thing. That was awesome, man. That rocked. And you also, for a while, were putting out, like before news was kind of just prolific everywhere, you were compiling a BJJ like newsletter. Like it was a bit.
I actually thought of that the other day.
What's that?
That one with Jiu Jitsu Weekly. I think it's probably, maybe I've lost the domain at this point. I'd have to go look. And then the quintet style jiu-jitsu team league tournaments, that was something I'd like to bring back. So I guess for listeners that don't know about it, it was a 4 teams, 5 people per team, sort of combined weight class. So we measure each individual team member and then that makes up the team weight. 3 points for everything, just keeping it super simple. And then if you got a submission, you would stay in, and then a new person would come in from that team. If there was no submission, both people were out, and then all the funds raised went to charity of the winning team as well, which was it was great.
Yeah,
3 points for everything. I never realized that, but that's really smart because it means your referees don't need to understand the point system.
Well, that's a problem if the referees don't understand the point system, but it makes it easier for the referees. You know, you think too much of the points.
What I wanted to do was have something where...
I could ref. I'm telling you that now. If I didn't have to remember 2 points, 3 points, et cetera.
Yeah, 3 points for everything.
I can do that.
I wanted to make it simple for everyone because I feel like people will support like anything, like any sport. It doesn't necessarily need to be exciting. You've got like diehard, like supercars fans, which is like the majority just watching people drive around a track for like.
And what the hell with curling? So I agree, man.
People love curling. Like you can make a sport out of anything. It's like the narrative you can tell. Yeah. And I think having teams where you can like support a team rather than an individual, because I think that's an issue MMA and jiu-jitsu has where you support an individual, you kind of feel like you have to back them regardless of like their political views or like whatever dumb thing they say on Instagram. And you're kind of like, oh, but I'm a fan. So like now I agree with this. Well, like a team, you can be like, oh, that's not the values of the team. And then, yeah, just like having a way people could root for it.
Mm.
My dream for Jiu-Jitsu Team League would be each gym would have a team. Mixed rank, mixed weight, mixed everything. And you would run a circuit over like a 3 or 6 month period. And you could go between each gym. Each gym can sell food, water, whatever they want to do, like while they're there. And then just like, you know, you have like a bit of a home team advantage or home ground advantage. You can have people that will like watch every game and know all the stats and everything and just make it a little bit more interesting where I think GDC is struggling to find that that market for viewers, like who watches jiu-jitsu other than like people that are really into jiu-jitsu.
Having said that, there are a lot of spectators. Like you put on a boa or something, lots of jiu-jitsu people go. No one who doesn't do jiu-jitsu is going, but there's enough people in the community to support events like this, who want events like this.
Yeah. I agree.
We've only got just over 5 minutes. I'm not sure the next question might take us right to the end, but I know that you have filled in quite a bit as a coach. So you've been teaching quite a bit. Just wanting to hear your thoughts on how that's helped your game or what it's done for you.
And it's always interesting where like you teach something and then people do it wrong and you're like, huh, I didn't think you would do it that way. I think it was John Will at a seminar once was like, people can be a black belt in technique and have no idea what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no idea how to like actually explain what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
So I just try to keep it simple for any class, even like advanced classes. One time I tried to teach crab ride and everyone looked at me like I had three heads.
I think I was in that class.
Yeah. And it was like, what is going on? So like keeping it simpler and like allowing like more advanced students, if they want to do their own study, that's okay. And then it's just been a lot of fun to teach. So I just like fill in sort of when they're scraping the bottom of the barrel, they can't find another coach. And then just helping out. I like teaching probably more like blue and purple belt than I do fresh beginners. I think it's hard to teach that like really base fundamental jiu-jitsu. It's a lot of fun and like just the little tweaks and kind of what do you pull in, what do you pull out of teaching a technique? You know, like some techniques I could talk for 3 hours about like the minutiae of like, oh, if you hold with the thumb and the index finger, that's different to if you hold the three fingers. and then some that I'm just like, broad strokes, like you'll get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's jiu-jitsu, yeah? Like some things, even as a black belt, like you are very knowledgeable about. For some reason, people think as a black belt, you know everything, but then there's certainly areas that I don't really have that much understanding of. I don't think I could teach. So, yeah.
That's I've had some people act as if I am more knowledgeable than I was like 3 or 4 weeks ago when I got the black belt. I'm like, the same dude. Nothing's changed. It's like, what do you think? You think they took me in the back room and I burned the candles and we did some prayers and suddenly got the arcane knowledge, like
scrolls. You've got now the black belt scrolls. Take them home and read them. They've got every detail you're missing right now.
I know. And they're like, oh, I don't know. I don't know how that thing works.
To wrap it up, Nick. Sorry, Anta, did you
want
to?
No, that's fine.
The 2 minutes.
Yeah, let's go. Let's do the parting words then. Kim, you close the show.
You want to, close it out for us, Nick, with, just even if you wanted to repeat some elements of your black belt speech would probably be a nice way to end it.
And before you do that, I also want to say you have had more than three interesting things to say. So you've broken the thing that we started.
We need more than the 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah, we might have to go long form with you, bro.
Yeah. what would I say? I have to remember my black belt speech now.
1 minute 53 to do it.
I know. I think, just keep showing up. Jiu-jitsu is going to be there throughout your entire life if you let it. Like I said before, I've bought a house, I've gone to university, I've gotten married, I've got a kid on the way, and jiu-jitsu was there the whole time. It's good day, bad day, you just go to the gym, hang out with some friends and just roll around, and if you're getting there, then I'll call it a good day. I think it's easy to get caught up on what are my competition results like, am I a pro, am I a hobbyist, what am I doing, but just keep showing up. That's where the magic happens. It's you're not going to suddenly learn everything in one weekend. It's just that consistent work over time. And I didn't say this in my speech, but if you're at a gym when you're I don't like the people or I don't like the coaching style, look around. Even if you have to drive a little bit further or find your people in the sport, I guarantee there's someone that's doing or teaching the way you want to learn.
Brilliant.
Awesome.
I love you, Nick.
Thank you so much.
You're a legend.
We'll have this episode out. There is a 10% discount. Use Roll or Die. We'll have in the show notes. We'll include that link, and we'll see you on the mats.
Woo. See you later. Bye. Cheers. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah.
Bye.